Welcome to Saha Says, where we go over headlines of the week and share our in-the-weeds opinions. Joining us tonight are myself, Sciatic Nerd, Cooper, and Pinky. Thanks so much for joining us, guys, on the program. We are going to get right into this and launch right into the news, starting with a story from motherboard.vice.com talking about encryption gets in the way of 75% of cases, Europol chief says. So, in the U.S., police and prosecutors continue to say encryption, that is, the use of math to protect data from outside eyes, including those of the government, presents a significant barrier to solving crimes or following leads. Now, on the other side of the Atlantic, the head of Europe's law enforcement body is saying that encryption is an issue in the vast majority of cases agency sees. Now, to me, this is still going to be a hot-button issue this entire time because everyone wants to be able to look into and see and read what everyone else is doing. And at the same time, we should be given the or afforded the right to protect our own data. Guys, do you agree or disagree?
I agree. Encryption is going to continue to always being an issue. It's a, you know, double-edged sword there because we want our privacy. And I mean, I know both in the US and Europe, they've both been saying a lot recently that encryption is blocking their cases. We haven't actually seen any cases in recent, I don't think, that have helped provide this, you know, our support to the government. So I'm kind of against what they're proposing.
It just makes me wonder if it's a big smokescreen, just like the fallout from them paying, what was it, like $1.5 million to crack that Apple phone?
Oh, goodness.
And
yeah.
What did they get from it? Nothing.
Nothing.
All they got was the guy's contacts, if that. And just because you know what, you know, where he went and got ordered his pizza, you know, doesn't mean that helps with anything about terrorism.
Exactly.
And that just leads me into, you know, further. You know, according to the article by Ars Technica, encryption is essential tradecraft of terrorists, as quoted by the FBI director. It's like, okay, yeah. FBI Director James Comey is upping the ante on the government's war on encryption. During a news conference Wednesday, Comey not only said he expected more litigation over the issue, but he claimed that encryption was an essential tradecraft of terrorist groups like ISIS. Really? I thought it just helped people protect their passwords through 1Password. What do you guys think?
I think LastPass is the option, just another option on the table, of course. But at the same time, realistically, you know, it's protecting your data moving back and forth. It isn't just about protecting passwords, but I agree you're right. It's not, they're just shaping the phrasing it in the form of, oh, this is bad, nefarious stuff. Do you think so, Pinky?
I agree. I mean, like I was saying earlier, the U.S. especially keeps saying, you know, terrorist groups like ISIS are using encryption to hide their plans and plots of attacks like Paris, but we keep saying again and again, no, they're not. It's just the end-to-end, you know, actual connection. This storage itself, like on the phones, is not encrypted. So this is just another excuse for the government to try to, they're upset they're losing their back doors and they want back in, is what it comes down to.
It's something to keep in mind. So, a Ukrainian hacker admits stealing business press releases for $30 million gains. So from NJ.com, out of Newark, the report is, a Ukrainian man who was part of an audacious scheme to hack into business newswires to get advance news on company earnings reports, generating an estimated $30 million in illegal earnings, pleaded guilty Monday in federal court. That's amazing. So basically, complete and total espionage. Think about that. If you were operating a service that actually provided, hey, we're going to, you know, send your press releases here, and then ahead of schedule, before anyone else knows, they leak the press release when they don't leak it. Excuse me. It is taken. It is hijacked. What would that do to the marketplace if every time you thought you were announcing something, but it won't be released to the public, let's say in a week to 2 weeks, because you're trying to get all your ducks in a row. And instead, someone apes it, gets a hold of it ahead of time. Now what are you facing?
30 million reasons why you need to have a little bit better security on your sites, right?
Absolutely.
Either that or maybe some lasers on fish.
Oh, this is just interesting to read. Just it's baffling that they actually, there's not enough security in place. I guess we could tie this into, the government wants encryption. Maybe we need our businesses to actually start using some.
Admit, right, that's actually probably the way we need to be headed, because it mentions in the article that the person involved admitted in court that they were part of a ring of hackers and thieves who, from 2010 through July of 2015, cracked into PR Newswire, Business Wire, and Market Wired to get advance notice of company earnings statements. They basically personally sold that insider trading information for tens of thousands of dollars, according to the prosecutors. That
Wow.
is amazing. You're talking about real-world impacts of people doing bad things with computing. If you think the blue team isn't where you need to be, folks, that is actually the future of protection, is understanding how they're breaking in my opinion, of course, how they're breaking in and then learning how to curtail it. This is what we need to be detecting and defending against.
Incident response and not leaving ports open, please.
Exactly.
And speaking of hacking, the Hacker News Network .com, yes, .com. British hacker shows British hacker wins legal battle over encryption keys is the headline, and they're talking about here that National Crime Agency NCA. Oh, I love those acronym places. Has failed in its legal attempt to force British citizen and political hacktivist Lori Love to hand over the keys to encrypted data that has been seized from his home over 2 years ago.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And at a
Wow.
Tuesday hearing in court, 7 at Westminster Magistrates Court, the NCA's application to make Love disclose his encrypted computer passwords was refused by the judge. Thank you, judge.
So we're saying that actually the judge upheld the right of the holder of the data to not give up their password. Is that right?
Yep.
Yes.
Pinky, no, go ahead.
And also they go further down and talk about U.S. prosecutors pushing against American hacker Aaron Swartz and his supposed links to Anonymous, who unfortunately could not handle the pressure, unlike Mr. Love, and unfortunately committed suicide
Yeah.
in 2013 while under federal charges of data theft.
And they're always going to
Yeah.
take us back to that hardcore story because they want to basically point out, I think, and bring back to mind that look, there is a fight going on out there for privacy, and there are some concerns folks have. And all the good intentions in the world, bad things can still happen.
Yeah, there are always casualties and a war for privacy. So.
Unfortunately. Jalopnik.com talks that tells us that Google will pay you $20 an hour to not drive its self-driving car. According to the article by Aaron Alanis King, excuse me, Alanis King, most wouldn't argue that getting paid to drive cars is a dream job, but Google is putting a new spin on the concept in its car division. The company put out a job listing looking to hire people to sit behind the wheel of its self-driving vehicles and, well, not drive them, unless absolutely necessary. The job title is actually Vehicle Safety Specialist. And it pays $20 an hour to work in pairs with another specialist inside of the cars. Testing occurs in the Phoenix suburb of Chandler, Arizona, and the requirements on the job listing include a bachelor's degree, no criminal history, a clear driving record, and the ability to type at least 40 words a minute. I find myself wondering if that's while you're driving. I'm just curious. Pinky, what's your
Or
typing speed while you drive? No, don't answer that.
I don't.
That's
It's
probably
not
wise.
illegal.
I don't have a self-driving car yet. Sorry.
Okay, Coop, would you take a job for $20 an hour to not drive?
Yeah, especially if I could also have a second job at the same time working for Domino's delivering pizzas. Heck yeah, sign me up.
No kidding. You'll make a whole lot of money then.
Yeah, and now we also have at Softpedia.com, Anonymous launches Onion IRC to teach the world about hacking and hacktivism. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
And it shows here further that at the end of April, members of Anonymous Hacker Collective announced the launch of Onion IRC, an internet relay chat. Yes, that's what IRC means. Network where the group says it claims to teach people about hacking hacking and hacktivism. Ever since launching the service, the group has been teaching classes on all sorts of subjects, ranging from how to use tools like Nmap and Bash to the tricks of OSINT, open source intelligence. Yes, that's what that means. Most of these courses, chat logs, are available online at the Onion IRC Twitter account. But, you know, if you think these were the only things attendees learned, you're wrong. There's more. Teachers and the main people behind the campaign have been focusing on promoting the principles of hacktivism. And it just goes further on. What does this make you think, guys? Oh, goodness. This is like a loaded gun.
Oh, my gosh. Pinky, you start, please.
I think it's a decent concept because, you know, I'm all for supporting learning these tools, Nmap, Bash, and all that, because it helps promote security culture and helps us learn how to defend better, because if you know what they're going after, you can defend. Alternatively, for God's sake, don't use something that can tie back to you, because obviously the government and other people will be in there spying for the next hacker. So don't do something stupid to get tied back to you.
Well, right, but aren't they also honestly looking for people with talents and skills to maybe even say, hey, you seem to be really good at this, would you want to come work for us?
I think it's a double-edged sword in a way, because sure, you're looking for them, but at the same time, if you're going to a place that, you know, is trying to encourage hacktivism and civil disobedience.
Well, yes. Okay, good
point.
How
do you trust them with, you know, national secrets?
And that's the challenge, because hacktivism by definition is not necessarily on the level where not everyone agrees with these concepts. And so there is a danger there. You make a valid point. Apple's iOS updates bricks iPads. Uh-oh. Update crushes low-level lock screen hole, then wreaks havoc. So Apple's latest iOS 9.3.2 update appears to be bricking some iPad devices. This report comes from theregister.co.uk. Now, reports of borked iPads emerged on Twitter thanks reportedly to a hardware issue requiring users to possibly restore their devices or contact support. And people have. Users have tweeted to Apple support with complaints that their iPads cannot be restored through iTunes. Uh-oh. Well, the Register has sought comment from Apple and, well, that doesn't say if they actually responded. It just says that the patches mentioned address a low-risk security vulnerability that allowed attackers to bypass lock screens on modern iPhone 6 handsets. Now, they go into a little bit of detail about who did it and what kind of devices are running it, but it says that attackers gain physical access to the device in which Siri has access to a Twitter account, making it unlikely to be of great use to criminals or security testers. And that's a very interesting way to actually find something. You have to wonder how it is that people are able to say, you know what, I just want to look for a way through the Twitter API or a specific application and see if they can create an operating system hole. Do you think this actually will serve Apple and other companies to help them harden the APIs that talk to the OS itself? Coop, what do you think?
I think giving Siri a Twitter account just reminds me of Microsoft's Twitter bot. And, you know, how long did it stay online before it became a millennial just enraged with drugs and
trolling people,
spouting all sorts of Hitler nonsense? Come on. You know, is Siri already saying, I need drugs, I need sex, I need Hitler? That sucks.
I'm not
sure. Get rid of this, John.
I'm not sure.
Get rid of this, please.
Thank you. Do you agree?
Apple, you.
Oh, yes, I agree. I'm probably giving AI access to Twitter and whatnot. We're not there yet, especially if they're going to be learning from other tweets or whatnot. However, I do think it's interesting that someone would go through the API just to find this one little hole. That's amazing.
Okay. See? It's a good thing to be aware of.
And now, you know, we see this on techcrunch.com. Apparently, blockchain open sources Thunder Network, paving the way for Bitcoin, instant Bitcoin transactions. If it wasn't, you know, already instant already, you know, they're making it that much easier. You know, I'm sure Federal Reserve and other areas are happy about that. It says, blockchain, the company behind the world's most popular Bitcoin wallet, has been quietly working on an interesting project called Thunder. The Thunder network is an alternative network of nodes that lets you make off-chain Bitcoin payments in seconds and settle back to the Bitcoin blockchain every now and then. And it makes me excited about Bitcoin all over again. At least that's what he thinks. I don't know. I don't know what you guys think because I'm not all that excited.
Well, but think about it. If you could actually, instead of being connected to a cryptographic engine that confirms your payment, and you can do this asynchronously is what this sounds like to me. This introduces kind of a pay-as-you-go, well, it'll catch up later. In other words, it's introducing convenience into a cryptocurrency. Does that sound like that to you, Pinky?
It sounds exactly like that to me, and while I'm not the biggest fan of Bitcoin, to me, this is a great way to revive the popularity, because to me, it seems like Bitcoin's been becoming a little less popular, probably due to the fact that you can't do instant transactions. So bringing this might have a chance to actually go a little bit more mainstream.
That just makes me a little curious, actually, about what those transactions are being used for. Although it is becoming a little more mainstream, it's just an interesting part of the underbelly of the internet, maybe still to me in the back of my mind. I don't know if you guys agree or disagree. Pinky, is that even something that sounds legit as an idea to you, or?
I agree. I don't really think it's ever going to become that mainstream. I do question why people use Bitcoin for non-nefarious purposes. But again, I'm all for innovation and trying to bring new ideas to, you know, society. So I'll see how it goes. I'm personally not going to be adopting it anytime soon, but I'll watch.
That's the news for this week. Now we're going to go ahead and move on to another segment, codename How. And it's the hacks of the week, the ones that we see as being most interesting or most scary, depending on your own thoughts. First one here is being reported on by Gizmodo.com. The headline is John McAfee apparently tried to trick reporters into thinking he hacked WhatsApp.
Whoa.
That'll be genius. I'm thinking he's pulling out those social engineering skills. Maybe that's what he's using to run for president. But let's go ahead and look further down in the article here. Apparently, John McAfee, noted liar, according to Gizmodo.com, not me. I didn't say that he's a noted liar. And one-time creator of antivirus software, also shows his name, apparently tried to convince reporters that he hacked the encryption used on WhatsApp. To do this, he attempted to send them phones with pre-installed malware and then convince them he was reading their encrypted conversations.
Oh.
In April, WhatsApp announced that it had added automatic end-to-end encryption for its billion-plus users. The company touted that the move as one that would help protect and secure communications of all WhatsApp users around the world. Now, McAfee has a history of being shifty with the press about his alleged cybersecurity exploits. Did he make a plane fly sideways? That's my comment. Not theirs. In March, for instance, during a media tour that included appearance on CNN and RT, McAfee claimed he would be able to hack into the phone of San Bernardino terrorist Saeed Farooq. McAfee never proved his claims, and he didn't eat his hat like he promised either. Or was it his shorts? I don't remember.
Wow.
And later admitted that he was lying in order to garner a load of public attention. Yes, I didn't use the word that's quoted here on the article. You'll have to read it at home and enjoy it. And earlier this year, McAfee hedged on his terrorism prevention ideals for America. Did he ask about building a wall during the interview with CNN about his libertarian candidacy for president, saying that his strategy for preventing homegrown terrorism was difficult to explain? What do you guys think? Do you think he needed a whiteboard?
Well, so I honestly think that they went a little far. Basically, it sounds like it comes across as though it was more of a grab for attention, and it just doesn't sound like maybe it panned out. I don't know. What do you think, Pinky?
I think it was a little bit of a silly move to go send them phones infested with malware just to try to get some publicity, but like this whole article is trying to explain, they're just not very pro McAfee, which is
Yeah,
whatever.
exactly.
And they're just trying to get some more attention and try to make people realize that don't believe him per se if you're using WhatsApp and that it's been, you know, hacked or whatever.
Exactly.
It's still secure. Its encryption is end to end. If you have a keylogger on your phone, well, your life's just pretty crappy at the moment.
Agreed. That works. Now, in a different story, a teen student from Japan says that he DDoSed 444 school websites to make teachers aware of how incompetent they actually were. Ouch. So, the article from techworm.net goes on to say that a 16-year-old student from Japan DDoSed websites of 444 elementary, junior high, and high schools in the area just to remind teachers that they're incompetent. That's a huge statement. That's obviously also not going for the honor list, I don't think. The teenager has been arrested on May 11th, and Osaka police have filed a case of obstruction of business charges against him. The police say the teen launched a denial-of-service attack against the Osaka Board of Education server, which holds the web pages of all those schools in the area. Although in high school now, at the time of the attacks from last November, the student was in junior high school. According to police, he said his own school environment is what motivated his actions. He basically has a grudge, it sounds like, against the teachers and felt that they were speaking down to him, and he just wanted to put them in their place by the way the article states it. Now, what do you think, guys? I'll start with Coop going back around to Pinky. What do you guys think this time would happen if a student in let's say, of between, I don't know, 8 and 12, suddenly figured out how to mess with the school's network? How is it in a day and age like now, number one, do you think that kid would get a job the day after? Number two, do you think there would be huge repercussions?
Well, as a, you know, in my opinion, really, he screwed up by not doing just 404 websites and, you know, computers just by itself. To me, that would have been the perfect statement. And, you know, whoever's in charge over there really, really, really needs to give the kid a couple class periods to work for them during the day. You know, call it, you know, prep for Network Plus, what have you, prep for college. I don't care. Give the kid a job.
So basically turn it around, take these efforts and turn them around to push it forward. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it's like, it makes me think, you know, if you read a bibliography of H.D. Moore's past, how he ended up working for his school, school district, what have you, after class is done at the end of the day, and really helped them, Austin area schools, actually improve their networking and what have you, why not create another H.D. Moore? Because we've seen so much come from his own passion in computing. Let's get another generation going. What do you think, Chelsea?
I agree. I mean, this kid's obviously bright. He's already figuring out DDoSing, and only doing 444 isn't a number to necessarily scoff at. However, I think everyone needs to be careful in how you proceed with this, because we don't necessarily want to encourage every single student to DDoS their school or school district just for attention and an easy job either. Because security doesn't necessarily mean bringing down everyone just to prove a point.
I agree completely, because this is another situation where there are a lot of times when folks are misunderstood or feel that they are maybe not connecting with people the way some other students do, that they feel alone and isolated, and this might push to well, it could turn things around in a negative way. It would be outstanding to take and turn that around. Because I can speak personally and share that, if you don't mind, that there is something to be said for having someone take an interest in you in your personal growth and actually say, we'd like to see you do better. Hey, what is this thing that interests you? Can we help you develop it? Can it be used in a positive way? Because obviously taking down the school's network, while definitely voicing the frustration that the person must be feeling or DDoSing these websites, it just... there should be a better way. There should be a better way. And I'd like to believe that there are, you know, most of the folks that I've had the blessing to meet in this group, they're fantastic people. They are pointed towards growth, and they really believe in that as a concept. And that's kind of what A lot of the conferences, the community-driven ones like B-Sides events, always feels like it's an opportunity for growth, and it's a positive way to do that. That just me on my soapbox. Sorry, I don't mean to take up all that and get too deep in that.
And one quick thing, real fast, is that, you know, at least in America, we have activities like Cyber Patriot and CCDC, you know, one for high school, one for college, for these students who are more interested in the side of things to maybe take out their frustration in a little bit more positive and building manner so they can practice and further, you know, refine their skills in a way that won't bring down a network, get them in jail, or further trouble. They can still get the attention they need and connect with others like them and still have a good career.
Yeah, and further down, it looks like we've got another article from softpedia.com. Website of Albanian hitmen for hire hacked and data dumped online. Oh no, I guess he's going to come after you. A hacker that goes by the name of BRPSD, whatever that means, has hacked the dark web portal of the Albanian mafia group called Beza, subsequently dumping the data online, exposing their hitman for hire service. The data was first uploaded to files.fm website on April 23rd and also made its way into the Siphon service as risk-based security first noticed. Softpedia has also downloaded the data and verified its content. The Beza Mafia is the name of the Albanian's biggest crime organizations, Beza meaning trust in Albanian, and the group is very active across Europe, but it has also been seen operating across other continents as well.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So what's the key takeaway?
Look, you know, just looking further into it, and it looks like, hacker leaked details about the site's users using admin password, looks like.
Yeah.
Just trying to look further in the article. You know, really? You know, do you even compute, dude, if you're using admin and password?
Ouch.
And it's, you know, got a whole list of, you know, the dump here, usernames, hash passwords, email addresses, sign up data, user ID, and user status. Oof. Wow. You know, somebody's going to have a field day with that. Paging Interpol.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, that actually brings up a point. So scammers appear everywhere. People always try to figure out a way to get one over on other folks, it seems like. And it even happens on sites that are these professional or barter-based sites. So would you trust if someone says, hey, I am an InfoSec expert and I'm posting it on a public site, how would you validate those credentials? So this is the question, because on a site called Simbi.com, folks can log in, I believe, and create an account and share ideas and ask folks. They're creating basically kind of a virtual community-driven currency is the feel of it. And it's a great way to say, oh, I've got this idea. Hey, crowdsource, what do you think? And, you know, get folks to talk about an idea. So here comes someone who has created an account and said, I am an InfoSec expert. They're saying, basically, I can provide security services or training to you. But it all has to be within legal limits. I'm not going to do anything malicious, but I'm here to help you. I've got these credentials. And you know, I'm ready to work. Well, tell me, how can we get together and do stuff together? And the concern is, how can you validate these credentials? Would it be safe to just, oh, I'm a mom and pop shop. I'm on this site. I want to share about my ideas. Oh, well, here's this person whom, by default, if you're going to work in security, that's going to open up some doors, isn't it? Isn't there a risk that anyone could go forward and say, oh, sure, just let me into your network. I'll help you figure out this other stuff. We'll work on hardening your network. But if you don't know who it is, how can you honestly trust someone to come in without taking advantage? Pinky, what does this sound like to you?
It sounds something that needs to be taken with a lot of caution. Because, I mean, even looking at, for example, this guy, it's an equivalent of InfoSec specialist. It's the same as a hacker, which I don't necessarily agree with.
Right.
You can, you know how to defend rather than just hack or do a penetration testing even, you know. Some people are better at defending than they are, you know, testing. So it comes down to you have to trust that this person actually has their certifications.
Right.
And do you actually want them to let, you know, if they're that good of a hacker, do you trust them not to add a little surprise for you later in the network so you have to go back to them and have an endless cycle of needing their support?
That's an excellent point. I mean, and there is a huge risk factor. I mean, trust is a big issue these days anyway. You know, I saw a comedian recently who was talking about when he was growing up, if someone came to the door, hey, I was just stopping by, you invited him in, you had cake, you put on coffee, and you sit down and you share a while. Nowadays, it seems like, according to the comedian, if someone comes to the door, people hide behind the couch, please, I don't want anyone to know I'm home. It's just a different mindset these days. And the concern is, anyone who's going to be getting onto your network could potentially, as you said, leave a little gift, a little extra something something. And that seems risky to me. Coop, have you had, I mean, so how would you normally approach this? Would you talk to people you know? What would you recommend if anyone was listening and then came across an offer like this, what would you suggest?
Well, I'll give you an example out of my own life. When I was closing on the house that I live in now, I found out the title company that was used by the realtor ended up freaking getting hacked and losing, you know, payment for a house.
Oh,
it was transferred by a wire to the hacker, not to the person that sold their house.
Oh.
And they're like, hey, you're into that. Can you do incident response for us? And I was like, no.
Wow.
I am not qualified. Let me do this favor for you. There's this company called Rapid7. It's in Austin. They can take care of you.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, if they're too expensive, let me give you three or four names of other companies that may or may not be local. I'm not totally sure where their offices are, but, you know, they're the top 10 in this industry. You don't want someone like me. I am not qualified for something like that.
But still, the idea is you pointed them towards the resource that was available.
Instead of saying, hey, I'd be glad to look in there. Let me go ahead and give you the baker's dozen with a keylogger and a back door.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, we've got it on sale this week.
Great. It's on Craigslist. Please just follow this link to this page. It'll be awesome.
Oh, Craigslist dump.
No, I'm all sorry. Right. That's
Speaking
not right.
Of fun and hacking, are y'all fans of Mr. Robot? I am too.
Oh, yeah.
Guess what? They've got a new website that is awesome. It boots up, shows Grub. It looks like you're booting into Linux. It's, you know, and for a Linux guy like me, that's awesome. I want to rip that off. I so want that. And it's not even run by Flash. Thank you. It's not Flash. And it's, you know, here's this article from Naked Security on it, talking about, it's by Sophos, of course. Real life hacker finds serious bug and hacker TV show Mr. Robot's website. Oh, no, no. You know, this is why we can't have nice things.
Exactly.
And, you know, it goes further down here as soon as I can get the mouse to scroll. Yes, technical difficulties on the podcast. The TV show Mr. Robot received a lot of praise from its tech-savvy audience after the USA Network drama about a group of anti-establishment hackers that debuted last year. About to return for its second season on 13th of June, the marketing folks at USA have come up with some clever promotions to build anticipation and attract attention, including a website that allows you to join F-Society, this fictional hacktivist group featured in the show. Ironically, though, a real-life hacker discovered last week that the Mr. Robot website had a serious security vulnerability that a malicious attacker could have exploited to steal Facebook profile information.
Oh.
So when you visit the site, whoismrrobot.com, you have the option to play a game that requires you to sign in using your Facebook profile. That means handing over your profile data, including your name, email address, profile picture, age range, gender, language, country, and more. Yes, all for $19.95.
Hold on. I thought that the Facebook logon was just an OAuth token. It didn't necessarily have to pull the profile details. Or is that just the nature of the application on the website, does the article mention?
They have a brief picture, and it looks like the OAuth, you know, the application Mr. Robot is asking for additional information like public profile, email address, and photos.
Okay.
So if they didn't clean up what else they might have been passing, then the OAuth token might have provided additional details. But I mean, just your email address and maybe your profile itself, which could include additional details like when you were born and whatnot, could be enough to get into your Facebook account or other accounts.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So anonymous... So attackers affiliated to the Anonymous Collective claimed to have taken down the Bank of England's internal email server. Now, this is an article from infosecurity-magazine.com by Dan Raywood. Now, he says that according to their news site, the Anon News website, the attackers claimed to have taken down the Bank of England's internal email server as part of an operation dubbed Op Icarus. The websites of National Reserve Bank of Tonga, the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston, and the central banks of Sweden, Myanmar, and Laos were also claimed to have been hit. Stephanie Weigel, senior director at Carrero Network Security, said while the impact on the individual targets of the DDoS attack campaign, Op Icarus, is unclear. Obstructing or eliminating the availability of email servers is significant. In an online world, any type of service outage is barely tolerated, especially in the banking industry, where transactions and communications are often time-sensitive and account security is of utmost importance. So now the real challenge comes in, where are they going with this? So they said that we must strike at the heart of their empire. They go on with manifesto-level documentation. They're talking about how they're working on trying to find bigger targets. And they're calling out that anti-establishment type language that's popularized in Mr. Robot because that, you know, that's causing us to question our own idealism, right? I mean, that's the what our current style of life is. That's what Mr. Robot challenged to me. And I thought, it's good, make us think. But this is actually more, well, this is hacktivism, right? That's what's going on here. So now you have to take a pragmatic approach to what this really means. And you have to imagine, okay, so it's an email service. You're not really stopping the whole flow of traffic. But these are not impossible things. We can, you know, this can be mitigated. Not we, but this kind of attack can be mitigated, right? This isn't the end of the world. The sky isn't falling, right? So, Pinky, you've had experience in preventing DDoS attacks, right? So, what are the standard things, or if you have, what are the standard things that you've learned in blocking or preventing DDoS?
A lot of it just comes down to proper training on your security people and setting up things correctly, you know. It sounds like their firewall didn't actually stop the DDoS, which is going to be the best way to stop. I mean, in some circumstances, you just can't avoid a DDoS. That's part of the problem and why there's so much research into it right now. But it just comes down to is, you know, they might not have a good enough infrastructure to help distribute the load or possibly, you know, a security team who's noticing, hey, we're getting DDoSed by this range of IPs. Let's try to slow down or at least warn people that this is happening.
Okay. See, it is not the end of the world, people.
Well, I mean, what would end of the world would be is if they actually got into the email servers and started accessing customer information rather than probably just a day's worth of email access. If it's that, you know, critical, just call them.
Excellent. Good advice.
Talking about end of the world, you know, according to darkreading.com, a Tennessee man was found guilty of a Mitt Romney tax return hack scheme. You know, convicted for attempt to blackmail PwC accounting firm with release of former U.S. presidential candidates pre-2010 tax returns. As a 37-year-old man from Tennessee was found guilty of extortion and wire fraud by a federal grand jury in Nashville May 12th for threatening to release income tax records of former 2012 U.S. presidential candidate Mitt Romney. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, Michael Mansell Brown of Franklin, Tennessee, was convicted of charges of 6 counts of wire fraud and 6 counts of using facilities of interstate commerce in connection to a scheme, claiming that he had hacked the Price Waterhouse Coopers LLP, different Cooper, of course, computer network and obtained pre-2010 income tax documents of Romney and his wife, Ann. Oof. Talk about a bad time for taxes.
Yeah.
What do you guys?
I'm concerned, actually, about this. I don't think this is appropriate, because what does this say? What are we actually risking and putting out there now? Are we going to... They can take anything they want, right? People can, if they really want. They can break into anything they want. They can take it, and it asks for $1 million just to into another Bitcoin account from anyone wanting the detail. Okay, this is ransomware, people. This is a huge concern right now. I personally have friends who have experienced this. It is not good. Someone from a conference very recently was saying, do not pay the ransom. You get the right people involved, and you move on. But hey, if there was ever an explanation for needing a great backup system, this would be it. Protect your data offline. Get a backup, store it, file an actual plan, a disaster recovery plan. It is not an exciting, this is never going to be its own episode of a drama show. Well, we got to plan our backup and see about when we're going to be trading drives and taking one out of the house and putting it in the safety deposit box and keeping one here. It's not going to be popular, but it is necessary. It is a way to prevent your own worst rainy day. Just my two cents. Pinky, what are your thoughts?
I agree, especially if you're going into a career field such as politics, where you know people are going to be trying to dig up as much information as possible about you. And taxes are often a common talk of, oh, well, they paid less, they paid more, whatever. Don't store this type of sensitive information online for a hacker to get to, because they're going to be going after you, and it's only a matter of time. So backup, 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 and ideally not online.
Absolutely. You can have a hot copy or a hot swap, hot folder, whatever you want to hot call it. But the point is to get a backup that you can keep close at hand. And again, I've got to push the idea of swapping out the drives to help prevent relying on one machine in case it's going to burn out. You have at least a failover. And if you swap them out weekly, you only lose at most a week's worth of data. And hopefully that prevents the worst rainy, rainy day. So.
And you said that was not going to be on the next action show, what have you. Are you telling me that that's why CSI Cyber got canceled?
Yes, they were moving
on. Because they were going to do that? Come on.
Yeah, this week on Exciting Cop Show, we'll plan a policy and documentation procedure on how to back up your data. Dun, dun, dun. Tune in. I don't think that's going to sell a lot of tickets, but I think it would save a lot of problems.
The Who backs it.
Outstanding. At least it's going to have a great soundtrack. An Android Trojan detected by Russian security firm Dr. Web as android.smsspy.88 evolved in the past 2 years from simple spyware to banking Trojan is now moving on to a mobile ransomware threat. More news from softpedia.com. It was first detected in April of 2014, and this Trojan was delivered by SMS spam. And once it infected victims, it was capable of intercepting phone calls and SMS messages usually used for two-factor authentication systems. As time went by, the article says, the Android SMS spy Trojan evolved and added the ability to fish for credit card details using a Google Play Store-like interface. As well, this would help to kind of do that social engineering part, because you think you were looking at the legit site, and basically it would mimic these popular bank logons in Russia. So now the biggest update comes at the end of 2015, when Dr. Webb says the Trojan gained the ability to fish for credentials from almost any bank around the planet, along with the capacity to lock the user's screen and then ask for money. This increase of functionality also has the effect of on its distribution model when switching from SMS spam to fake apps, posing it as an Android version of the Adobe Flash Player. Once again, poor Adobe taking it on the chin. Guys, okay, so I haven't heard of that many. I admit, I don't do a lot of malware reverse engineering. That's really not my zone. But I gotta say, I haven't heard of that many of these tools getting updated and updated and updated. Sure, they iterate, they change, but is this one so popular that it's kind of like on version 3.0 here? I thought these were the kind of things that morphed and changed so quickly you just couldn't get a handle on them. What do you guys think the deal is on something that's evolved like this, and worse still, how do you protect against that?
I'm thinking you can probably get it on Craigslist, man. Isn't that where you get everything? It just makes me think, you know, just like we were making that point earlier, you know, back your stuff up.
Yeah.
And also, if you're going to a website, even on your phone, pay attention to the link, pay attention to the address. Notice if it's not the same place that you normally go, make sure it's not spoofed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like you were saying, it can copy the site, you know, basically clone it and, you know, make them and, you know, capture all their data. You know, that's just, you know, 101, please pay attention and don't get, you know, don't get everything taken. If you do find that, you know, this is you've been affected, you know, don't pay, like you said, and get help. There are people out there that are glad to help. Yes, it's probably not going to be cheap, but it's better than paying the bad people to help enable their nefarious deeds. What do you say?
I think, you know, like you're saying, we really need to emphasize looking at the URLs you're visiting more. If for a bunch of us more geeks, we can look at Kali, see the social engineering toolkit, and see how easy it is to spoof an actual website. Yeah. And I think this is what this malware's taking advantage of, the fact that, you know, people weren't, maybe Android in particular wasn't closing the hole they were going in, so they figured let's exploit this, and along with changing our signature, add more functionality so we can get the most bang out of our buck.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of, you know, more hacks online, it's not just the average user, it's hackers too that are getting hacked. According to ThreatPost.com, an underground forum called null.io that helped users share stolen credentials, stolen software cracks, leaked content was hacked earlier this month, spilling a ton of information, including users' email addresses, encrypted passwords, IP addresses, and other details. According to researchers at Risk-Based Security who reported the breach last week, 1.3 gigabytes zipped file which was expanded to a massive 9.45 gigabytes of data was leaked on May 6th. Huge amount of information relating to the message board was leaked, including details on roughly, you know, over 500,000 registered users and 800,000 personal messages between them, according to this firm. So, you know, what do you guys think? You think this is good? This is funny? What, you know, all this, you know, stuff is out there and it's not even safe for them.
Look, the reality is that nothing is officially safe, right? But we're talking about an underground forum called null.io. It's the marketplace. So do you think this is a blue team trolling the guys doing the work? What do you think?
I don't think it's necessarily a trolling incident. Maybe it is. Maybe it's just emphasizing the point no one's safe, you know, irony. But I think more than anything, it's just opportunity. Sometimes as we become more tech savvy and more aware, we become a little bit less lazy, maybe a bit too confident. So maybe this website itself, you know, was like, hey, we know everything, and they forgot some sort of basic thing that allowed this hacking to occur. I don't know.
Well, yeah, that's definitely a good point. So, good guy hacker, according to motherboard.vice.com again, a good guy hacker finds a flaw that could have drained $25 billion with a B from an Indian bank. So last year, during a cold, gray, late fall weekend in Sweden, ooh, nice writing, the security researcher found that with a few lines of code, it would be easy to steal money from any or all customers of one of the largest banks in India because of a faulty mobile app. Thankfully for the bank, this person was friendly and is a white hat hacker who finds flaws in order to get them fixed. So instead of taking advantage of being malicious with their intent, he told the organization Motherboard, who's publishing this article, that he immediately reached out to the bank to let them know of the issue and help them fix it, rather than trying to take advantage of figuring out this access. See, this is what I actually kind of enjoy reading about, because you see a situation where bug bounties can actually help. Now, it doesn't say up front if they talked about a bug bounty was made available. It's just the idea that if he had been a nefarious human, it would have been a different story potentially. And instead, this person turned it around and said, look, I want to reach out to you guys and kind of figure this out and help you resolve it. And that actually is fantastic. So it doesn't say that he actually had gotten a payout on it, but he actually was thanked instead of someone trying to bring charges, which sometimes happens because people take their security very seriously. So I've just wanted to share on the idea that it's really good to see a story where someone turns out to have found a flaw, told the firm about it, and it got fixed. Maybe it wasn't perfect, but at least it's a step in the right direction. And that concludes our Hack of the Week section. We're going to move now into a section where we get to talk about some of the toys that we like. You know, we'll call it Gadgetron, in kind of an homage thought here. So we're going to go right into that by talking about, from paleofuture.gizmodo.com, because we love Gizmodo, the FBI can neither confirm nor deny wiretapping your Amazon Echo. So back in March, there was a Freedom of Information request that was made with the FBI asking if the agency had ever wiretapped an Amazon Echo. Now, the author of this article got a response saying, we can neither confirm nor deny. Now, we live in a world awash with microphones, says the author of this article. They're in our smartphones, our computers, and our televisions. We used to expect that they were only listening when we asked them to, but increasingly, we're invited to our internet-connected gadgets to always be listening. And there's no better example of that than the Amazon Echo. Now, if you thought about it, though, they go on in the article to talk about the risks of these things. But yes, it's true. I've talked with friends who are in this industry and said, I don't need someone eavesdropping on me the entire time. But I put it to you that the devices by the big three major firms already have put these into our lives with digital assistants. And that's what Echo is too. Anything that you can call out a phrase and it's going to answer back to you, then it's already there, so you can turn it off. Well, okay, so you could buy the tap, right? That's basically Amazon Echo without the responsive system. So you can just hit a button and then it'll ask you the question, but wait, there's still a microphone present. Is it listening? What about the microphone in your phone right now? Quick, tighten your tinfoil hats, people. Hide under the bed, put your money in between the mattress pads, and just realize that we have technology all around us. It's everywhere. It's not a disease, people. It's technology. You choose whether or not it should be in your world and in your life. I'm getting soapboxy here. I just like to admit that I'm not afraid of having a microphone hanging around me. And if it's not your cup of tea, so be it. That's fine. But I think it's humorous that they're basically calling out, government agencies may be listening to you using your own devices. Well, people joke about that every day. So is it a real risk, or is it something to understand and deal with? I can't say accept, because that's not the right phrase. But I'm definitely saying that, look, I like to wear Bluetooth headphones so that I can drive and have a conversation or listen to a podcast at my desk while still sharing a conversation with my coworkers if I so choose. That doesn't mean that that microphone is necessarily listening to me, but it could be. So what does that say for us?
Well, I'd say it, you know, goes along with one of my favorite sayings, live as if.
Live as if.
Paranoid. Live as if you're already hacked. Live as if the government is spying on you. Live as if you don't really care, because the world is going to happen whether you want it or not. So if you're going to live in fear, you're going to die a million times. If you're going to live happily and just not care, then you're going to be a whole lot happier and you're not going to die of a heart attack at a young age.
Or is ignorance just bliss? I don't know. Pinky, where do you stand on this?
You think I'm ignorant?
I didn't say that. Oh my God.
Yes, you totally did.
Thank you. I love you.
Oh my gosh. That is not what I was saying. I'm asking if ignorance is bliss. I'm not saying, oh, you got me fine. It's embarrassing. That's not where I was going. Okay. Sorry, Pinky.
It's all right. So I agree with you, Cooper. I mean, just if you're gonna be paranoid always and try to hide everything you do in this world where technology is becoming more prevalent, you're just gonna fail. Every time you go out, there's video cams and microphones listening to you, watching you at a mall or whatever. So unless you want to just live in a basement with no technology and hide from everyone, just accept you're gonna get spied on. Don't say shit you're gonna regret, and just live your life happy and try to be as privacy centric as you can and make smart decisions.
What do you mean you don't live in your mother's basement just like everybody else listening to this podcast?
Oh, there it is. Oh my gosh. I was not going. I was. Wow. Well, there it goes. So all five listeners gone. That's it. We're done.
You mean
Oh,
we have
man.
five? I thought we had one.
Yeah.
Darn.
Well, I at least listened to make sure the audio was at a good level, really.
No, I
Yeah,
thought
that's
our
where.
only one
That's.
was Cooper.
Yeah, that's where we get all the ratings from you checking to make sure the audio is good.
That must
Which
be
makes
it.
me, before the next transition, makes me want to say, if you listen, if you've listened to more than one episode, please find San Antonio Hackers, the Saha Twitter account and throw us an opinion.
Yes,
Let us know
SATX hackers
how.
dot yeah, SATX hackers on Twitter.
Yeah, let us know how much we've screwed it up. If you're actually are enjoying it, if we've made you laugh. If not, then tell us what we're doing wrong and what you would suggest. In the future, I hope that you can like send us your favorite articles that you'd love to hear our ramblings about. And speaking about that, I'm going to get out of the basement and go to the attic. What attic, you might say? I'm going to go to the App Attic, our segment that lets us talk about our favorite applications for phone, for the computer, for whatever. This week I'm going to talk about computer, but it's also available on mobile. And that's Axion VPN. Avail More information at axionvpn.com. Now, I personally have been using it a lot, and I'm loving it. Compared to a lot of VPN solutions out there, there's some paid ones, there's some free ones. I've used a lot of them because, yes, I am a tinfoil hat wearer, but I do like to live as if and protect myself and my traffic. And, compared to all the services I've used so far, this one is the best. And I'm looking forward to trying out a higher level because they've got three tiers for personal use and also for corporate, according to their website, after reading through it a number of times. They've got the free tier, which is basic, and it's throttled like everybody else's free stuff out there. Now, then they've got the pro, which is unthrottled connection, and then they've also got what they call a pen test one that gives you extra tools. I'm wanting to look into that myself because I like tools, I like toys. I don't know what other what solutions have y'all used? Just chime in a little bit here.
Well, so I admit I've not done a lot of use of VPN tools, and so I have some learning to do here. And that's something I actually want to do because it's just one of those things that it bothers me when I hear all about this all the time. You hear about the dark net. Okay, I don't want it to be an ominous thing. I just want to understand a little bit more about it. I admit it's not my, I'm not well steeped in this. Pinky, do you have more experience in this area?
I have a little bit more experience. I don't use VPNs for my tinfoil hat. I threw mine away or used it for cooking, probably.
Nice.
But instead, I primarily use a VPN to actually access region and lock shows. So for me, this personally might not be as useful to me, but I've been hearing such great things about it that I'm curious about it anyway.
Oh, good.
Yeah, there's also a free tier if you're just going to use it for shows, much like any other thing.
I actually have to admit, by the way, that it's not a tinfoil hat for me. It's underoos. So if you ever hear me crinkling as I walk by, that's probably why.
And
I'm
on
sorry.
that note.
No, seriously. Actually, there's one more I do want to share about really briefly.
Oh.
Coop, you did a great job hunting this down and bringing it out into the rundown. It's Certbot, certbot.eff.org. Everybody knows that everybody likes to say they understand PKI. At least I've heard that a lot at conferences. The reality is that security is not necessarily an easy thing, but digital certificates have been a particular challenge for a lot of users. Maybe not the security pros, but definitely the admins. It's always been kind of a, it's not necessarily the the first thing on their plate, and it's a small speed bump, perhaps, in their regimen. Now, one of the cool things is earlier, over the last couple of years, the EFF, or Electronic Frontier Foundation, has been working on an open community support certificate authority. It's a CA, a certificate authority. And what this would mean is, for basic assurance, just to be able to establish a secure connection, you can get a free certificate. But the how is a little challenging for folks. So what this is, certbot.eff.org, is a front-end tool that will actually help you walk through the steps of getting, I don't know if you've actually looked at this, anybody, but if you have a need for a certificate for your web server, it actually lets you choose what web server software, any of the non-Windows stuff. That's what this is going to be great for. And they've got a list, a big list, of how to implement and use the certificate tools on everything from Debian to Ubuntu. I mean, you're talking all the way up and down. I should have said Arch, and I don't know any Zs, so forgive me. But the point is that there's a wide range listed on the CertBot page to get you started. And if you tell them which of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different web servers you're using as a platform on top of those operating systems, this will walk you through. So instant documentation on how to get a free digital certificate for a website, web server, that's awesome. Having worked with more than a few customers on getting digital identity set up for their websites, this to me is a fantastic tool. So there, I've said my piece about it, and I really hope people take advantage of it and can use it.
You know, what they should use along with that is HTTPS everywhere.
That's a great point. It's an extension. HTTPS everywhere is EFF's extension that can be added to two or three of the major browsers at this point and allows you to force the connection instead of saying, well, you know what? My server X or website X or Y allows me to connect either with or without security. This forces the issue and works to make that connection all the time, which is great because, you know what? It's one less thing to have to worry about, and it's something we need to pay attention to. We want to focus on making sure that we take advantage of the small steps that we can take as people using the web browser and try to improve our own security footprint. That's just one way that it can be done. So, any last remarks from anybody? Coop, do you got any closing?
Just love EFF and what they do. I just want more toys from them.
More toys. Got it. Pinky, closing remarks.
I agree. I love EFF. I love how their instructions are for, you know, a lot of different operating systems. So let's keep it up. Let's keep up the publicity and get things to be more secure.
Outstanding. And I am Sciatic Nerd, and we thank you so much for listening to Saha Says this week. As Cooper mentioned earlier, please hunt us down at SATX Hackers on Twitter and give us a little feedback if you don't terribly mind. We'd love to hear from you. And we realize we just put an open call out to the internet. So once the trolling stops, we're listening. Thank you very much for listening to us, and we will talk to you next time. And that concludes our hacks of the week. And now we're going to get into a different approach. We're going to talk about the toys that we like, and we're going to make an homage here and call it Gadget Prawn. So starting with our Gadget Prawn, we want to talk to you real quick about me not having my links set up correctly. So let me not mess that up a little more. And that is not where I thought I was going.
What? And I will help you out by saying, it looks like Gizmodo.com, again, one of my favorite websites, has FBI, can neither confirm nor deny using Amazon Echo.
There. No. I'm going to jump back. I'm going to fix it. I have to.
I was just trying to cover for you.
I appreciate that, but I want to fix my mistake. I do. Thank you, though.
We got great, that little section and other little sections. We got to cut and throw it on the very end for entertainment.
Well, maybe we should.
A bloopers aspect.
Okay. All right. So hang on. 4, 3, 2.